This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider.
This is the Mark Madden Unfiltered Podcast from the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody. It's Mark Madden, the super genius, here on the Mark Madden podcast for the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. I'm joined, as I am once a week, by Tim Benz. And Tim, let's get to some of the bets right away. And by the way, the New York Jets will no longer be my pick of the week. Zach Wilson has lost his starting job. Do you think that's temporary? It's obviously a reaction to him not being accountable for how bad he played in this past week's loss to New England.
I do think it's temporary because I don't think they have any other really good viable options. And they're in a playoff chase. That whole division is in the playoff chase. So I don't think it's permanent. I think that there's a message sending going on here. I think it's awful quick to scrap a pick that high, a quarterback. If that's the case, if they're going to do that, well, gee, the Steelers will be thinking the same thing about Kenny Pickett by this time next year, potentially.
Well, maybe sooner. Jerry Dulac noted on Twitter that the Jets benched Wilson, the Patriots benched Mac Jones. At one point, the Miami Dolphins benched Tua.
Right, and when you look at some of the other things that Jerry said about what the veterans want, we can get into that in a little bit, or what the veterans wanted, at least at the time, with Mitch Trubisky. Maybe there's some discord over that.
Let's get into that now, because Jerry said in his mailbag on the Post-Gazette, somebody commented that the Steelers could have two or three more wins if Trubisky had remained the starter. And Jerry said there are some veterans in the locker room that feel that way as well.
I don't know what game Trubisky wins.
I think they'd have Miami? One more win. I think they'd have one more win. I think Trubisky's a better quarterback right now. I think they put Pickett in too soon. I think to say two or three more wins, though, is a bit dramatic. But as far as how the veterans view it, veterans don't want rookies to learn on their time. Look at what happened when Maddox got hurt and Ben came in, and Alan Faneca said he didn't like it.
Unless the rookie takes off like Ben did, I could see why that reaction would be there. A presumptive belief by the veterans that this guy would have figured it out as the rest of the offense had come along. But when did he go out, Mark? He went out in the middle of the Jets game, right? So do they win the Jets game if he stays in there? I don't think so, because the offense got better once he went out. I don't think that you can assume that they would win the Bills game or the Eagles game or even the game against the Bengals, maybe the Dolphins game. That's the one game that comes to mind where maybe he would have made a difference.
Yeah, and Trubisky did win the Tampa game, came in relief after Pickett got concussed. And I'm also told that Trubisky is still livid about the way his situation was handled, how early he was pulled. I've been told he maintains that he got told by Tomlin he'd have at least through the bye week to, you know, prove himself. And certainly he did not get to the bye week. He got pulled after 3.5 games. Well, and I'm also being told more and more that his argument with Deontay had something to do with it.
Little stories like that corroborate.
Logically, it shouldn't. But Tomlin plays favorites. We all know that.
Especially if you consider that, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Tomlin made some comment about patience or being a patient organization, something to that effect. And it was like as if he had already forgotten that he had benched Mitch Trubisky. Like, there was nothing
after patient, 3.5 games.
Right. There's nothing patient about that. You know, watching the offense evolve or whatever it was he was talking about coming off of the Saints game or going into the Saints game. There's some comment he made at his press conference. That's what it was, about the bye, you know, evolving out of the bye, so forth and so on. And it was just like he completely already has forgotten that Trubisky was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year.
Well, that last press conference he had, just this past Tuesday. It was the height of his career as a horse manure salesman. And, you know, he's hit some pretty incredible heights before that. Like when he said Deontay's not getting the ball because the other team is basically double covering him to the point where he can't get it. That's such a crock. AB got double covered. He got the ball. Hines Ward got the ball.
Well, not only that, Mark, but he said that in the wake of every newspaper outlet in Pittsburgh or blog that covers the Steelers doing some story or another about how Deontay Johnson is the most open receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true. I mean, I'm not going to watch the video, and I don't trust Pro Football Focus. I do know that Deontay's best three games this year were with Mitch Trubisky throwing him the ball. The first three games of the year, he's not been over five catches since. There's some sweet irony there, ain't there? Deontay yells at Trubisky, maybe help get him benched, and ever since then, Deontay's on the pay no mind list. I love it.
That's maybe something that Johnson should have been more acutely aware of while it was going on. I mean, the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Tim might have told him, but he blocks me on Twitter.
Is that right?
Yes.
First block he's thrown.
Now, getting to some of the games, let's go college football first. Ohio State is a 7.5-point favorite at home against Michigan. Both are 11-0. I think Ohio State is a class above Michigan. I think Ohio State and Georgia are a class above everybody.
That's fair to say, especially with some of the struggles you've seen, the little up and down dips that you've seen from the top end of the SEC in recent weeks. I like Ohio State in that game. If you want to feel secure about it, go ahead and buy a point or half a point. You can do that at Bet Rivers. If you want to get off the hook at 7 and get it to 6.5. But, you know, with the 8 points, such as it is, people go for two all the time.
Is it 8 now?
No. I'm saying, like, if some people just look at the 7-point kind of old-fashioned.
I thought it was 7.5.
That's what I'm saying.
Last time I looked, yeah.
Yeah, so if you don't care about it being at 7 versus 7.5, leave it where it is. Take Ohio State. I'd be comfortable with that. Like you, for as good as Michigan is and as well as they played this season, I still think Ohio State can beat them by a touchdown.
Who's going to be in the playoff? I thought it might be three SEC teams at one point. Maybe now only one. And I'm not sure if that's fair because I think the SEC teams are good teams beating each other. I think if only one team gets in the playoff, the SEC is being penalized for having a lot of good teams who have to play each other.
Yeah, but with that set up the way that it is, winning your conference has to mean something, doesn't it? I mean, if you're going to limit the pool...
Tim, I am long on record as saying the playoff should be four conference champions.
Yeah, so I'm saying that I don't feel bad for the second, third, fourth place SEC teams.
Now
I get your point. Like, you think that those are the best quality teams, the most talent. But at some point, in the format such as it is, winning in the regular season has to mean something.
Now, let's look at some NFL games. We got Tennessee getting 5.5 at home against Cincinnati. How is Tennessee the dog in this game, Tim? I'm starting to believe in Tennessee a little bit, and here they are the underdog in this game.
Well, I like Tennessee in that game. Where'd you see? I see Tennessee right now getting 1.5.
That's what I said. Tennessee.
Oh, did you say 1.5? I thought you said 5.5.
No, Tennessee, 1.5 underdog.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that.
At home.
Yeah, I would take Tennessee in this. I know they always have quarterback concerns. They have some banged up question mark players, but I still go with Tennessee. I like that one. I don't know if I make that my pick of the week. Maybe people are getting high again on the Bengals because they did what they did to the Steelers, but I think the Steelers made some tactical bonehead moves. Thought process. That's another thing that came out during the Steelers press conference with Mike Tomlin, Mark, when he talked about how they kind of did the dominoes thing. Like, you know, they were keying on Mixon and then Mixon went out and they started keying on Boyd.
God.
Why? Like, T. Higgins is the much more explosive, dangerous player.
Well, yeah, but if it's so easy to cover Deontay so he never gets the ball, why can't they do the same to T. Higgins?
Yes.
Why don't they just say to their D-backs, okay, watch what they're doing to Deontay and do the same thing to T. Higgins?
I think there are some, myself included, who do the fantasy thing and say, why isn't T. Higgins putting up bigger numbers, especially with Ja'Marr Chase out? Well, you see what happened when somebody paid attention to Boyd first.
Now, my pick of the week is San Francisco -5.5 at home against New Orleans. And this applies to Ryan Tannehill to a lesser degree, but can we finally say that Jimmy Garoppolo is a winning quarterback?
Well, I was thinking about this. So he's gone to one Super Bowl. He's gotten to another NFC championship. It's not out of the question that the Niners could at least get to the NFC championship this year.
I think they're one of the top two teams in that conference.
He'll never win a Super Bowl, probably,
Well, but if he gets there again,
like he's getting into the neighborhood where
Matt Stafford won one.
Right, yeah, good point. But I think Stafford has more natural talent than Jimmy Garoppolo does.
I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a winner.
I look at, like, for instance, Roethlisberger got to 3 Super Bowls. And how many AFC championship games? 4 out of those? 5. Like, so if Garoppolo keeps winning with the Niners, like, that's not as far distant from what Ben did until you get to the Super Bowl wins. That's the difference.
Which is
big.
It's pretty big.
But I'm saying, like, when you get your team that far, and I don't think these Niners teams are as good as Ben's Steelers teams, but we just act like he's in a different galaxy as a quarterback. I'd take Ben 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, too. But, I mean, like, I think it's time to stop mocking Jimmy G is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, too. And I think the Niners really did themselves dirty by giving up all they got to draft Trey Lance, who, I mean, how can you think he's not a bust?
Right.
He's clearly still not ready to play.
Can't stay healthy. I mean, I know injuries dog Garoppolo, too, but that was a lot to go after a guy who was a project.
Now, here's a game, Tim, I'm personally invested in. Tampa Bay is giving 3.5 points at Cleveland. I need Cleveland to lose so I can sell 4th in the North t-shirts here in Pittsburgh. Right now, Cleveland and Pittsburgh both 3-7. I need Cleveland to finish 3rd so I can do the 4th in the North t-shirt thing.
I have money that I bet on the Steelers at the start of the season, an exact order of finish bet on them being 3rd. So I have to root for Tampa in this game. To keep the Cleveland Browns suppressed and in last place.
Is Tampa going to have a renaissance here with Brady? Or are they just in a bad division and it looks that way?
I think that's the last thing.
They can win the division, right?
They can win the division, kind of like the Niners can win the West, even if this isn't the best edition of the Niners. I think by the end of the season, we'll see Tampa be like a 9-8 South winner over a 8-9, 7-10 Atlanta team.
And maybe win a playoff game.
They could win a playoff game.
Brady,
yeah, sure.
With his guile, I mean, they might get a real bad matchup if they're 9-8, though. Well, wait, no, hold it. Division winners get seeded 1-4, right?
Yeah, so they'll probably get, if they were to be the fourth team, the fourth division championship team,
right?
They'll get the top wild card team, which will probably be 2nd in the NFC East with the way things are going.
Yeah, which would be a winnable game.
Which will essentially be, Mark, likely the winner
at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it will likely be the winner of this Thanksgiving Day game between the Giants and the Cowboys, if you want to
project. That's going to be the Cowboys. I think Dallas is coming on. I think the Giants are fading.
That's a weird game, isn't it? Like, I love the Cowboys straight, but I like the Giants getting 9.5.
Yeah, well, it's by the time people hear this, it'll be played, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought we were airing.
No, we can talk. We can talk anything we want. It's right. Just a podcast, for God's sakes. Washington, -4 at home against Atlanta. Can every team in the NFC East make the playoffs?
Every
team. All 4.
What about all 8?
Get all 3 wild cards.
What about all 8 from both Easts? I think it's possible.
It's possible. Isn't Washington going to start losing, though?
I keep waiting for it, but I saw a couple stumbling blocks where I thought they distanced themselves in the negative way from the rest of the division, and it hasn't happened yet.
Is Ron Rivera a good coach? Because I've always considered him to be in the meathead mold of Mike Vrabel.
I see him as a good make-the-most-of-what-you-got coach.
Well, he's doing that.
You know, and I think he made the most of, like, Carolina for a couple years. I think he can – I never look at Ron Rivera as a difference-making coach. I see him as a coach that can take a mediocre team and make them good, which is what he's doing now, which is what he's done at Carolina.
L.A. Chargers -4.5 at Arizona. Why are the Chargers so mid and Justin Herbert? I thought they had a chance to win the Super Bowl. I know they've been plagued by injuries.
They're always plagued by injuries. Like, they're one of these teams that always seems to have injury problems that cost them not only the division, but also the last wild card. I thought the AFC was soft enough at the bottom that I could feel confident in them being the 6 or 7 seed. I'm not. Now, they would be a team that I can still look at and say they got a shot to prevent the whole East from getting in. But aside from them, Mark, it's just the Bengals.
Now, this is supposed to be the easy part of the Steelers' schedule. So why are they 2.5 point underdogs at Indy?
I like the Steelers this week. I like them on Monday night.
What, to win or to cover?
I like them to win. If you want to give me the 2.5 or a field goal or whatever, I'll take it. But I like them to win because, now I might be contradicting myself just in my explanation, because I don't know how good of an idea it is for Tomlin to insert himself as a game day tactician or strategist.
Yeah.
But I think he is going to be so tight over there this week. I think he's going to treat this week like the friggin' Super Bowl.
Because he's coaching against Jeff Saturday.
Bingo.
Because it's the Hall of Famer against the amateur.
Bingo.
Yeah. Well, that's a good storyline.
I think it's the storyline of the game because, and you've made a good point.
I agree.
That Matt Canada has been the be-all, end-all for catching criticism.
The great Satan.
Because, you know, there's this faction of the Steeler fan base that never wants to blame the defense for anything. There's a faction of the Steeler fan base that doesn't want to blame Pickett for anything. The national media never wants to blame Tomlin for everything. So everything goes to the offensive coordinator. But if he loses to Jeff, it's going to be about him losing to Jeff Saturday, not the Steelers, if that happens.
It's Mark Madden with Tim Benz here on the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. Tim, I want to talk about Hines, Warren, James Harrison being semifinalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Does either one have a chance?
I think that Hines has a chance. I don't think it's going to happen. I just think that the wide receiver position is too statistically dominated. But if you look, the weird thing is, if you look at the numbers, he's not as outlandishly out of the mix as some of the stats indicate.
No, he's in the all-time teens in a lot of categories.
Right.
That's not bad.
Right.
There are guys below him statistically in the Hall of Fame.
I think if you granularly drill it down and you see consistency and want to use consistency against him, I guess you can. But if you're going to do that, then it almost makes an argument for Harrison, who was dominant over a shorter period of time. You know what I mean? So, like, if you're going to argue one in one way, you have to argue against the other guy in the same direction if you're going to do that.
And I am willing to do just that. Ward has 1,000 catches. He was a great blocker, although I think that's overrated in terms of that being a credential for the Hall of Fame. He was Super Bowl MVP, so he had the one big moment. What's he lacking? Why won't he make it? What will the voters hold against him?
I think it's a big play, eye-popping catch kind of highlights. I think, like you said, most people think of highlights of Hines Ward, and, you know, they think of him catching a wide-open trick pass in the Super Bowl for his MVP. They think of him knocking players out with blocks. Like, you think of Lynn Swann, you think of Super Bowl X. You think of Jerry Rice, you think of all the Super Bowl catches. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he carries... I can think of some as a Steelers fan, but I don't know if John Q. Voter, who covers the Packers, thinks that way.
Tim, as someone who's covered the Steelers his whole life, I can't think of many. I mean, I think of him leaping into the end zone at the end of that pass from Antoine Randall L. to win the Super Bowl against Seattle. But even that, like you said, he was wide open. It was an ordinary play.
Mark, you know what? I think the one thing that goes in Hines's favor is, much like it was for the Steelers of the 70s, if you're a really good team and a 10 to 15 year era, and you were there for the breadth of that time, and a lot of success is associated with your name, then you kind of tend to get elevated. There are Yankees in the Baseball Hall of Fame. There are Celtics in the Basketball
Hall. Well, yeah, but that gets reversed too, Tim, because I think some people, voters, might just feel there's enough Steelers in already.
Are there enough in yet from that team?
I don't know that they differentiate that closely.
Because you're saying, so that team is basically who's in now. Bettis, Troy, Fanica, Cower, and will be Ben. Is that too many?
No, that sounds about right, though. I mean, I'm not outraged that Hines, you know, probably won't get in. I won't be outraged if Harrison doesn't get in either. And Harrison was Defensive Player of the Year. He had that 100-yard interception return in the Super Bowl. So what's Harrison lacking with the voters?
Longevity of dominance, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing. He played 14 years. But he was a scrub at the beginning and a scrub at the end. I'd say in the middle, like, he had a short prime, maybe 7 years?
So 2007 to 2011-ish? Somewhere like, yeah, 4 or 5 years?
Where he was really good.
Really good, yeah.
And then two more where he was, like, legit.
Yes.
Like, 4 or 5 where he was among the best defensive players in football.
That's about the range where I would put the spike of his career. But, you know, there are guys in the Hall of Fame who were only good for about that time, too. Well, especially at that position.
It begs the question, could the 100-yard interception return in the Super Bowl get Harrison in the Hall of Fame because that got Bill Mazeroski in the home run to win the 1960 World Series? That said, Mazeroski was the best fielding second baseman ever. I'm not sure we can attach Harrison to anything remotely like that.
But he still got in on a veterans committee. Like, you know, that might, it might take sort of like a Donnie Shell kind of vote to get those two guys in.
Or that deal when Cower got in, and I'm not saying this is why Cower got in, but didn't they induct the equivalent of an extra class that year? You know, some kind of anniversary deal?
Yeah, they did do that. Yeah. But I think part of that, too, was they realized they were having a backlog of players because, like, when you have 22 players on a team, if you're part of a good team, a lot of people are going to get in from that team. It's more than baseball. It's more than hockey. It's more than basketball. So, like, I think residue from success of the team trickles down to individuals to make the arguments all the stronger on their behalves. And I think Hines and Harrison are both very good examples of that.
Now get back to Hines for a second. Andre Reed is in from Buffalo. He's a receiver. Ward has the same stats pretty much. It's amazing how similar they are. Does that mean Ward should be in or that Reed shouldn't? And what about the eye test? Because I saw both play. I think Reed was better.
I think,
not by a lot, but a little.
I think Reed was more dynamic. And I think
more of a playmaker.
Yeah, and Reed was a part of a team where the offense was the bigger story. But even when you get to team success, you could say, well, Andre Reed was in four Super Bowls in a row. All right, well, Hines got there in three of them, you know, and got to a couple AFC championships along the way before that, too.
Well, Hines won two.
And won two, and Reed didn't win any.
Yeah, you see, I think I'd rather vote for the guy who won two than the guy who lost four.
I'm one of these guys when it comes to Hall of Fame discussions where if I can't think of that team that was dominant in an era without that player, I lean to yes. I lean to the word fame in Hall of Fame. If I hear Hall of Fame, to me that means, were you part of the fame of that great team?
Or right.
Can you tell the story of 10 years of football that you played without mentioning your name?
Are you immediately remembered?
And I think Ward and Harrison are both really remembered for those Steeler teams.
I think more by fans of the Steelers, though, than the general citizenry, don't you?
I don't know, Mark. I'll use the Buffalo Bills example as a counter to that. Like, I was not a Bills fan, but I can go through 8 or 9 names in the Bills, 10 names in the Bills, and I'm not leaving Andre Reed and Cornelius Bennett off any of those. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe Bennett's not a great example, but Bruce Smith, I think that you can go really deeply onto a lot of rosters and find players that have gotten into the Hall of Fame because they're on good teams that aren't as good as Ward and Harrison or as recognizable as Ward and Harrison.
I also hate when we match up stats like I'm doing right now with Ward and Reed. That's the way you get too many people in the Hall of Fame. I'm a big believer in eye test. I'm a big believer in big moments.
Well, Ward was big moments, even if he wasn't necessarily eye test, because eye test might say that he wasn't the most dynamic wide receiver or the most athletically gifted wide receiver. So he's got at least one. But, you know, again, if you drill down on the stats and you see who's gotten in and you see some of the players who are behind him in some of those stats, especially if you do the sliding rule of passing era football, he matches up. Or like there's Don Hutson and Biletnikoff and guys like that.
Don Hutson.
You know, like, I mean, but these are guys who are measuring sticks in their era for wide receivers. And he was part of the early boom of spreading out to passing stats, even if his team didn't do a ton of that.
Well, do you agree that voters don't care about Ward's blocking? Like that when Ed Bouchette, well, I guess now it's Dale Lally, when he stands up at that meeting and campaigns for Ward and he brings up the blocking, that most of those voters just kind of roll their eyes and say, oh, that is so Pittsburgh.
Then they better not vote for Anquan Boldin either.
What do you mean?
Because that's part of the reason why he's a semifinalist.
Because of blocking?
Oh, yeah, he was a good blocker.
Yeah, okay.
That gets brought up a lot with him, too.
You know, the fact that I never heard that indicates that a lot of people probably never heard of it about Ward outside of Pittsburgh. And here's always been my attitude on Hines' blocking, which was great. Let's say in the best year Hines ever had blocking, it got the Steelers 70 extra yards. And that is probably a generous estimate. Who cares? That's chicken feed.
I think it's more an image thing, Mark.
No question.
You know, the image of who the Steelers are, what made the Steelers, he brought that defensive angle to the offensive side of the ball with Fanica and Bettis, who are also in. I think that's a big part of it. Toughness, you know, edge, grit, all that.
I'd give Harrison a slight edge over Ward. If I had to bet on one to make it, I'd bet Harrison, because Ward was never considered a very top wide receiver in his era. Harrison was a little closer to that on defense.
The counter to that is one thing that Hines has going for him that Harrison doesn't. The media liked Hines.
I didn't. I still don't.
National media loved Hines.
That's true. That's because he catered to the national media.
And Harrison didn't like the national or local media.
Harrison didn't like anybody. Didn't like anybody.
Didn't like me. I know that.
Didn't like me. I know that. Is Tomlin a lock to make the Hall of Fame someday?
Yeah, I think he is.
Do you think he should? Different question.
If Cowher's in, I guess he's got to be in.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure Bill should be in, but I'm glad he is.
Yeah, it's a strange trajectory that Tomlin is on. You don't usually hear a lot of arguments for coaches who peaked early, do you?
And he peaked real early.
He peaked real early.
I've said that the last 11 years, when he had a lot of resources and only won the 3 playoff games, that is a bigger critique of his career, a bigger negative than what's going on right now.
See, I'm thinking
what's going on right now happens to every team and every coach sooner or later, but he wasted the last 11 years.
Is there a coach that can match what Tomlin did as far as being great early and that mediocre late and still be a Hall of Famer? I'm trying to go through my head of guys, and I'm sure people can find examples, but coaches who are rocket ships early and then really nothing all that much for the last 5 to 10 years of their career.
Dan Bylsma.
Different sport, but yes. But I don't know if Dan was a Hall of Famer.
Well, Dan was more right place, right time than he was a great coach. Mark Madden with Tim Benz on the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. Tim, we've seen some World Cup games now. Who looks the best so far? France killed Australia. France is the team I bet on before. They were the third favorite at plus 770. They got Mbappe. They got Benzema. But boy, some of the upsets. Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. Not long before we tape this, Japan beat Germany in a battle of the Axis powers. It's crazy, and I can't help but wonder if it has something to do with the World Cup being in November in the middle of the pro league seasons.
I would agree with that. I mean, we talked about how that impacted hockey when they did, you know, the World Cup and when the Olympics came around, how that would influence international competition. Now, I'm not tracking this like you are, but
it influenced the leagues before and after.
What about Spain beat Portugal 7-0 or something like that?
No, it wasn't Portugal. It was a lesser
Costa
nation.
Rica.
Costa Rica. Yeah, that's, you know.
Was that supposed to happen 7-0?
Yeah, Spain's real good. Costa Rica is from CONCACAF. Like, that's the one flaw in the World Cup, but it's also one of the strengths of the World Cup. Every nation has a chance to make it, you know, because the qualifying is very thorough. But we take too many teams from certain parts of the world and not enough from others. For example, the idea that Costa Rica qualified and Italy did not is just absurd.
That's sort of like what we talk about sometimes with the NFL playoffs, right? Where you get a really stacked division and the third place team. We're just talking about with the SEC. You know, it's the same concept as the SEC, where they might have 5 teams that are better than the next team after Ohio State, but you're only going to get maybe one this year SEC team in.
I don't think any SEC teams will make the World Cup knockout phase, that's for sure.
Never rule out Nick Saban, Mark.
By the time people listen to this, the U.S. will probably have already played England. That is, well, maybe not. That's on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Did you watch any of the U.S. tie with Wales?
I did not, no.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. I mean, the U.S. gave away what should have been a 1-0 win with a bad foul in the box to give away a dumb penalty late. 1-1. England, I think, are going to kill him. But like I said, you'll probably listen to this after that fact. Now, here's one for the layman, Tim. Would you change any rules in soccer? We had a debate about that on my program.
Aside from letting them use their hands, I don't know. I mean, this is...
No, Tim, you can't have more than just the goalkeeper use his hands.
I think that would be the first one that would come to mind, but what was the one? Tell me the one that you're stewing over.
Everybody wants to change offside to make it more liberal. Like, offside is you have to be even or you know, shy of 2 defensive players, including the goalkeeper. One guy made a suggestion isn't terrible, which is if any part of your body is even with the last 2 defenders, then you're onsides, as opposed to now if any part of your body is not even, you know, like even if your shoulder is out front, you're offside. But
Let me ask you this. What's the thinking behind the concept of having that still be the system for onsides, offsides versus a line like you have in hockey?
Well, because it always has been, and it always should be. I mean, that's just soccer. Like, one thing I have always maintained as a lifelong soccer fan, we don't need to change the game for more goals so America's happy. You know, as a soccer guy, I'm perfectly content with the way it is.
To draw the hockey analogy again, then, what would be akin to a soccer move of getting rid of the red line as part of offsides?
Well, Tim, there is a line that's part of offsides. It's the center line. Like, you can be behind the defense if you're shy of the center line when the ball is kicked, when the pass is made. My favorite club team, Liverpool FC, we often exploit that because our goalkeeper, Alisson, from Brazil, is great at, you know, punting the ball. And he'll hit like a line drive after catching it to Salah behind their defense. It's worked on several occasions. So that's the line. But I just don't see any need to change any of the rules. I just don't. I think it's fine the way it is.
I'm not all that advanced in soccer rules. I don't know anything about soccer rules. But I'm open to the liberalization of offsides as a concept if it makes the game flow better. Not even just the scoring, Mark, but the game flow. Do you find that game flow is interrupted too much by offsides?
No. I mean, but I'm just a purist, you know, for soccer. I mean, it's funny because I'm a big fan of hockey, too. Those are my two sports. The one thing I would change in hockey, I would make the net an inch wider and an inch taller because you would never be able to see the difference, but the shots that hit the post would now go in.
No, that's a good point. I've heard that advanced before. And now, would they figure out a way to counter that with more goalie equipment, though?
That's what's always happened. If they would make the equipment smaller, like it used to be, I'd leave the net 6x4. But, Tim, there I go, trying to radicalize hockey for the sake of more goals when I don't want to have that happen with soccer.
Well, one other soccer note that came up to me, like I've heard soccer fans sometimes talk about this, is what triggers the penalty kicks? Are sometimes the fouls that trigger penalty kicks too nebulous or too punitive, do you find?
Well, the one the U.S. committed was obvious, so sometimes they're easy. I had somebody call the show and say that should have been a penalty because of the stage of the game with the U.S. ahead 1-0. But, you know, to me, as I say in hockey all the time, a penalty is a penalty.
You know, whether it's the World Cup or whether it's...
I've had some people also suggest that a foul that's like on the edge of the penalty area, like just inside, shouldn't be a penalty. Okay, then what do you make it? I mean, if you wanted to make the penalty area slightly smaller, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
That's where I think sometimes basketball gets into trouble. You know, like where is it a charge or is it a block? And then you have designated areas on the floor where you're just creating the same nebulous argument about the space on the floor instead of the contact and when it happened.
Well, I hate basketball, so who cares? That's Tim Benz. I'm Mark Madden. This is the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. And don't forget, bet now from anywhere, from everywhere.
Catch new episodes of Mark Madden Unfiltered every week. Available on the Bet Rivers Network, betrivers.com, and wherever you find your podcasts.